Hello, and welcome to this special episode of the Campaign and Media Week podcast in partnership with Pinterest. I'm Lucy Shelley, tech editor at Campaign. And today we are talking all about shopping and the shopping mindset, exploring how spending behavior has changed since the pandemic, how the various demographics are consuming media differently, and what all this means for the media agencies trying to reach them. And I am joined in the studio by some fantastic speakers. We have Matt Siberi, head of home at Pinterest, Rachel Moorman, head of social at PhD Global, and Eb Adieri, vice president of paid social at Jellyfish. So welcome everyone to the studio. How are you doing?
All good. Thank you very much for having us.
Oh, it's exciting to have a brilliant panel with us in the studio, bringing all different kind of perspectives. We've got the platform, agency side, planners. So let's talk about how shoppers' behaviours have changed, especially since the online shopping boom that lockdown gave us, and how this has then since changed after the cost of living crisis. Eb, let's start with you. How have you seen shopping behaviours change?
So it's kind of interesting. I think shopping behaviours have always kind of like evolved. And I think since the pandemic, obviously, shopping behaviours during the pandemic really took a different turn. They had to. And what we typically see is that they've sort of fallen back to the mean. So people are shopping as perhaps they would have done, but can kind of do it everywhere now. You know, the shopping behaviours change over time. But I think the thing that I find really interesting is that shopping thrill that you get, like that's still kind of there, whether it's online, whether it's offline. That's what brands are still trying to kind of get people to do. I think Pinterest is a great platform for doing that. Other platforms, whether it's Instagram, whether it's TikTok, that thrill that people get through like buying something that they think that it's just for me, that's always going to be there. And whether that's online or offline, I think that's still going to be the case. So short answer to the question, I think shopping behaviours have kind of gone back to perhaps their normal state and the consumer decides where they best get their thrill from.
I mean, it seems like it's made the marketer job very difficult
because absolutely.
You've now got to cover all grounds. And, you know, yeah, we do all right. We do get that thrill of that shopping thrill. That's why we call it retail therapy, don't we?
Yes.
What about you, Rachel? How do you see these shopping behaviours changing?
An interesting point that you've both made is that there is no linear customer journey anymore. It's very sporadic. And I think people are more intentional about their high street shopping now. I think you go there, you look for your inspiration online, or you come across your inspiration online as you're scrolling through social platforms, and you might do all of your research in that environment, and you're intentional about your high street visit, where you might also be looking for some kind of experience above and beyond the transaction. And I think typically, for example, me, I'm not going out to browse and look and see what I might find in a shop anymore. I'm going there with a specific intention, and it's really only if the item wasn't available online by the time I need it. And I think that that's a fairly typical experience. So I think that inspiration happens online, and then the high street is intentional. And I think that's where retailers maybe need to look at the experience that they can offer above and beyond that transaction.
I mean, yeah, you're right. It seems they offer something very specific, and that will change on sector, it will change on product. Yeah. But it's all about the experience, really, at the end of the day.
Yeah, and you can see that evidence through retailers that have pop-up things within their stores, right? Cafes or eyebrow shops, you know, helping you discover outfits that might suit, you know, yourself, like personal shoppers, for example. So they're starting to bring a lot more of these things in to keep people in store a lot longer.
I mean, Matt, from the platform perspective, how have you seen the behaviours change? Because it's understanding about when consumers are primed for shopping, isn't it? You know, whether that is relaxing at home in front of their phone or they're rushing down the street, it's about getting them at that right time. So how have you seen this change?
I think to a point that everyone's made is that journey is no longer linear. And something you just said there as well, like when we're at home sitting down relaxing, like we're consuming TV at the same time as we're consuming content on our phones, right? And now that is a dual thing that we do. So I think influencing individuals in that purchasing journey is a tricky one. What I do find is where brands have most success in kind of if you can say winning in this kind of market, I tend not to like talking, I think, it tends to mean there's losers. But if you can say like people who are winning, who are growing in this market and things like that, they're often the ones that are looking at individuals who are unsure about their purchase, or maybe they are going through a process of actually, I need to start shopping on a budget, right? Like, I think everyone is feeling obviously the kind of economic pressures at the moment. So that has meant that people are more intentional with their shopping. And if it's groceries, you might be thinking, okay, actually, that's got to get cheaper, right? So where do I go? It may also be the other way around, right? Luxury is still absolutely having an absolute boom and they're still growing. So if you're in that space, well, generally in luxury, you're more considerate anyway. So actually, I think what we do see is a big kind of shift in intention, or almost growth in intention, which is, I think, why kind of Pinterest is in this kind of new era of performance and shopping. It's because intention, you have to be, you're going through a process of thinking a lot about what it is. Is it the right thing? Does it match the rest of my wardrobe? Can I afford this kitchen in the space that I've got? Like, is this grocer able to kind of give me my weekly shop at the budget I now have? But I think part of the boom continued growth in online is that intention. It's people looking to research more and to really figure out how they do things. We're not as flippant with our purchases anymore. So I think consumers are a lot more mindful about what they're shopping at either end, either at a value or even at kind of that luxury end.
I was going to say that I think that there is, right, people are intentional, but that's because everything's kind of like everywhere at the moment and you can kind of transact everywhere. So there is a lot of that intentionality, but the journey to inspiration and intention can be really short at times, where you didn't know you needed something until you saw it and you're like, that's the thing. I didn't know that was a thing. And now that's the thing. Like I bought like a handheld vacuum cleaner. I didn't know that was a
I'm
thing.
I'm actually eyeing one off at the moment.
I didn't know that was a thing.
And have you not seen Monica from Friends when she vacuums her vacuum with a handheld?
This is a tiny one that goes into your car. So it's literally a tiny one and you just like put it in your car as well. It's just, I was like, I didn't know that was a thing. It was that small. Mm. So I think that journey between inspiration and transaction is really, really short. And that's because the platforms that we work with allow us to do that. So you're getting that inspiration, or you're getting that sort of prompt or that trigger, and immediately you can transact in there. Mm. And that has brought also, you know, it's merged that intentionality. Like I'm researching things, but also it can be like, I've just discovered something that I didn't know I needed. So I think those two things is interesting in terms of how behaviours have changed.
I was just going to pick up on what Matt had said around, you know, the people are a lot more considered with purchases because a lot of the economic challenges that we're all facing with the climate. But also I think it's a lot of, we're more mindful of our consumerism as well. So we're a lot more considered potentially with our purchases. So less flippant or throw away with what we're buying and more intentional, especially for the younger generations. And I think, Ebby, you made a great point then around that, the condensed point of inspiration and action and purchase. I think that's where social and platforms like Pinterest and others have a really strong role to play for us as marketers and for brands, particularly with those higher ticket purchase decisions, which have a longer time between discovery and purchase. And how do you keep their interest and meet them as their consideration changes and evolves during that journey? So I think that's a really interesting dilemma that we have, and I think some really exciting propositions coming up with like the use of AI, for example, and more heavy personalization that we're able to meet the customer with where they're at.
Yeah, I mean, it's giving consumers an extra point of contact with the brand, isn't it? It's like you said, if you're, you know, want to understand where that product has come from and the, you know, supply chain process behind that, you can now have access to all of this, a lot of this information. But you spoke earlier, Matt, about Pinterest's new era that it's going through. So let's dig into some of that transformation and let's account for some of that change, because people now go to Pinterest not just for inspiration, which it's, you know, a long time been known for, but people can go there for shopping too. And in terms of demographics, I think some people call it millennial mums, or had called it that. That's, you know, people went to Pinterest, but that has now changed as well. And so how are different groups behaving on the platform, and what is the platform like today?
Yeah. So I like to kind of to start almost with trying to get everyone to understand what Pinterest is in terms of almost like a social media environment, right? So something we like to often say is that if you're on Meta, for example, you might be engaging with it in terms of like, I'm in the past, right? So here are images of me at a party. This is how I kind of engage with that platform. And then you might engage with other platforms like X or Snapchat, and it might be like, I'm at this party. And then the best way of thinking about Pinterest in a very unique place is, this is where I'm planning the party, right? So remember that context, right? So it's almost, yes, we're in social media, but this is more about personal media, because no one's on Pinterest to kind of show anyone else that they're on Pinterest, really. They're there building kind of what they want, their dream life, the dream outfits, what they're doing in their homes, what they're going to make that weekend for dinner, right? So they're there for themselves. And that's been a space that we've been in forever. Pinterest was created so that you could have one place to save images online. Where this has got to is actually just lent very, very naturally into the behavior of the platform, which ultimately is, I'm searching for an outfit for this weekend. I've found all these amazing images of outfits because this is a visual kind of search engine, and now I want to buy them, right? And I think that historically is something that Pinterest probably hasn't been the strongest in, right? Because we've very much focused on what the kind of our bread and butter is in terms of visual search. And that's why so many kind of advertisers have had such kind of success in terms of more upper funnel activity or very much kind of consideration layer. A lot of people see us very much as that's the safe space for Pinterest. But us just leaning into really what users want on the platform, which is to be able to buy, has ultimately just change Pinterest into kind of what it is today without us really doing much other than enabling that. So it's a very, very natural fit for us. And that's why we've seen such kind of growth in terms of performance. So we have stats around, like, we've seen almost like a 50% growth in engagement on shoppable content on the platform. So that really is growing. And then we are attracting new users. So if we talk about Gen Z, for example, it's one of our highest growing. And we often talk about Gen Z being, as you said, around being much more considered and intentional. They want to know where things come from, what it is, all that sort of stuff. And I think that's why they're coming to Pinterest. And it's great because what we often see is a younger audience using Pinterest to kind of reflect themselves. So there was a great thing that happened on Instagram recently where people were sharing on their stories, I'll go on Pinterest and search these four terms and then post it on Instagram, right? Like, this is my aesthetic, right? And that's a very Gen Z led thing, but it really shows their mindset when it comes to Pinterest, which is like, Meta is where I go off to show off things, but Pinterest is where I make it happen. Mm. And making it happen tends to mean purchasing. And we see that across everything.
You said there around that it's a reflection of themselves. And I think on no other platform has done that as well as Pinterest. You are the first to kind of build out the functionality for Black and brown people to be able to find products based on their hair texture or their skin tone. And now even for curvier people to be able to find products based on their body shape. And no other platform is democratizing discovery like that. And so I think that, for particularly for Gen Z, where that value that they need to see in the reflection of who they are and also their values and where they might want to shop is amazing. But that also opens up the platform for small and emerging businesses that cater for audiences that are underrepresented and really gives them a platform to reach people that are of like kind of value.
Yeah, I think I 100% agree. I think the fulfilling that demand that Pinterest has always had. I think that shoppable element, allowing smaller businesses to connect with audiences, but actually fulfilling the demand that audiences themselves have wanted. And we talked about this beforehand of, you know, Pinterest was always somewhere that I would find something. I'm like, oh, that's amazing. And then you'd click through and you could never actually buy it. You're like, where do I find this? And I think connecting that dot between discovery and actually I want to buy this, I think is great. But then also, you know, Pinterest has done a great job of some of the toxic elements, the more toxic elements of social media, of not even letting that in through the door. Yeah. From the gate.
I just think it just doesn't really happen naturally on the platform, right? Because it is more of a personal social space as opposed to I'm connecting and I'm trying to reach more people. So I think at one point you had the strap line of it's the happy place on the internet or something along those lines.
It feels very aspirational, doesn't it?
And it is,
It is.
The positive corner of the internet.
Yeah, and my husband's always like, oh, I don't know what to get you. And I'm like, I have told you, we've been together a decade, I'm like, I have told you from 10 years ago, if you're ever looking for something to buy me, just go to my Pinterest page. Everything I have ever desired is archived on my Pinterest.
He goes and sees loads of diamond jewelry, yeah, diamond jewelry.
The new kitchen that Matt has talked about, you know.
The kitchen,
and it is actually, if I go back, it's a reflection of my life over the last, you know, 10 plus years, because I've got the house or the wedding that I planned on Pinterest, and I've got the products that I was looking for my first baby, and the birthday cakes and the party themes for Elsa, you know, like, so it is an evolution of a life. And I think that the opportunity there for brands to be able to go, you know, at what life stage someone is at based on their Pinterest boards and their activity, and being able to tap into that, and then also be able to use that and connect it up with other digital touch points and advertising is, that's the sweet spot of marketing that I really enjoy.
Yeah, it becomes kind of a personal record of inspiration, doesn't it? I mean, but how well known is this this change within Pinterest among the media people? You know, at Jellyfish and PhD, how many of your clients are talking about using Pinterest in this new way? Is this something that's still yet to be kind of grasped?
It's an interesting one. I think it's Pinterest has been around for a long time, so I think we've always looked at Pinterest, as Matt said, that planning aspect. So there's certain clients in certain categories, whether it's home, whether it's beauty, have used Pinterest at certain moments to insert their brand, whether that's like at Christmas. I always remember Pinterest used to say this, like, if you're playing Christmas starts on July in Pinterest. And I was like, my God, don't do Christmas in July. But we've had clients who've always kind of lent into that. Increasingly, the commerce aspect, the shoppable aspect is starting to come to the fore. And platforms like TikTok and their shops, and Meta and their shops, and social commerce, which has been something that's been trying to sort of evolve within sort of the Western world, that is increasingly coming to the fore. So clients are starting to lean into it a little bit more. There's always a lot of like the back end infrastructure that makes that work, from like the fulfillment aspect to the tracking aspect. And Pinterest had their conversion API, or API for conversions aspect, and really kind of like leaning into that. So brands are still really getting their heads around some of the back end infrastructure and then leaning more into like the shopping. So that's what we're seeing at the moment. But I think Pinterest is doing all the right things, putting all the tools in place. So we'll see how that manifests in the next sort of 6 to 12 months.
It seems like then it leaves that space for the brands that do get involved now or early, that they're going to reap the rewards from that as well then.
Absolutely. I think those, but that's always been the case. Yeah. Brands that are intentional about their audiences, where those audiences live online, intentional about the way they are representing themselves in front of those audiences, whether that's online or offline, and then brands that really understand their own internal infrastructure and how to stitch everything together, the forward-thinking, what we call sort of digitally mature brands, will always be the ones that outperform the rest. It's not necessarily hard, and brands are really good about bringing their components together, that know their audiences really well, know what resonates with them. They're the ones that are always going to be front and center, and that's why they work with agencies to help them get front and center.
I think we're certainly having a lot more conversations with our clients around consideration of Pinterest at the bottom funnel of a media plan, and not just on the upper funnel awareness stage. And that's something that is increasing, rightly so. And I think it's not just consumers that are facing economic challenges at the moment. All brands are as well, you know, supply chain issues and costs, etc. So, you know, media budgets are under more strain than ever to show return on investment and efficiency, and diversification of budget spend is something that is prioritized in conversations that we have, certainly, and over reliance on one platform over another. So if we can show value of a platform like Pinterest or any others that can help deliver against that ROI, you know, objectives, then that's certainly something that everyone wants to hear about.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it's interesting. Both of you said something quite key as well. So I guess in terms of, to start that, how Pinterest is partnering with brands in terms of shopping and driving sales. And I think we are seeing lots of people in the industry test different things in terms of kind of owning that checkout process to then partnering with retailers. And ultimately, that's where Pinterest sees it. We're very much the enabler of that shopping. We're not owning the checkout. We're not doing anything like that. We're very much ensuring that we're kind of funneling into that kind of shopping experience there. And I think that that's really quite crucial, because it's very easy. And actually something you said earlier about like kind of being surprised into a purchase. And I think there are so many platforms that are fantastic for that, to be surprised. I'll flick through Reels and then I'll be like, oh, what the hell is this? And I've never heard of it before in my life, and it's great. Where I think Pinterest is very uniquely is that if anyone is being intentional about a purchase and there is something big in mind, if it's a big ticket item, whatever it is, it's quite a lot for an advertiser to try and surprise you into that purchase, right? So actually show up where you're looking to be kind of spoken to. And so the other side of things we often talk about is that ads and kind of engagements from brands are part of the ecosystem on Pinterest. So ads don't disrupt you in any of your journey anywhere elsewhere, yeah. Which, as we've said, sometimes that can be a good thing. It can surprise you into something. But in most platforms, you are often seeing one piece of content at a time. Mm-hmm. Where we're different is because we're showing you multiple pieces of content, and just our first party kind of data signals on a user is so intention heavy. When your ad shows up to sell you a kitchen, well, that's good, because I'm looking at a feed of kitchens. But it's exactly that, right? So if we are looking to influence shopping, we're in trying to capture that conversion on Pinterest. Well, that's great, because every ad that you're showing someone, they're in the mindset of purchasing. They're either early on in that journey in terms of planning, right, okay, how am I going to do my kitchen? Or they're at the place where they're like, right, I need to buy some faucets or tiles or whatever it is. And as I'm looking, well, great, there's an offer from XYZ brand, mid-feed, let's do it and convert.
Yeah.
And I think that's the other kind of real strength that we have in terms of kind of capturing the market as they're looking, right? Because the other side of it is, and you guys will know more than anyone, or more often than not, your brands are kind of running most performance activity through two channels, and they're tried and tested and they work, right?
Yeah, this is the thing around budget diversification. So yeah. It's a challenge, for example, for new platform adoption when you've got targets to hit, or it's trading season, for example,
yeah.
And you're less likely to test and learn on an e-commerce objective, potentially, when you know if you put X in, you get X out, and it's a little bit more unknown. And I think what really stands out for Pinterest is, on every platform, I don't want to show my age here too much, but for a very long time, the conversations that you have with clients working in the social space is, you can't just lift an ad and put it in social and expect it to work, and you need to make content specifically for social. And even TikTok had their don't make ads, make TikToks, right? But on Pinterest, it is very much like the ad that a brand might use is more native to the experience, and it's showing up where they're already searching, and it is a less interruptive experience. And I think as we talk about generations and their user habits, that less interruptive experience is particularly appealing with more skeptical audiences and generations, I would say, that want to be more intentional about their purchase. So I think the lesson there is, it's still about not making ads, but making creative that resonates.
Let's jump into that about media consumption behaviors and how they're changing, because specifically with social platforms, their relationship with search has, you know, changed quite dramatically, and the impact that must have at agencies across teams must be exciting, bizarre, and probably quite difficult. So Ev, I can see you smiling. What is that like?
I mean, it has always been sort of difference between search and social, and, you know, whether that's you're finding someone who's upper funnel or mid funnel. I mean, for our teams, you know, there's one thing operationally, how do you work? Like, which platforms are you logging into to buy the ads or to create the ads, whether that's on something like Pinterest Business Manager or Ads Manager or Google Ads or SA36, like who's actually like logging in. There's a kind of aspect around that. Ultimately, there are certain things that you do want to do with teams. You know, you've got to make sure that you're putting the right budget in, you're spending it in the right way, that you're tracking and managing performance quite well. So, you know, the thing that how teams are kind of like structured, as long as they're structured around a central theme of this is the job to be done for this particular platform, that's how we're structuring our teams around that. Interesting point that you were saying around turning up to where an audience is. And that's something we kind of really always focus on. Like, what do we want this brand to do? I think there's a survey from, I think it's LinkedIn who came out with the survey that only 5% of the audience are in market at any one point in time. And like 95% are kind of not in there. And you want to kind of capture the 5%, but you also want to bear in mind like 95% of the market who are not in market. So as long as you kind of understand that this is the role that this particular platform has in capturing that audience, and it may be you are capturing that 5% and make sure your brand are there, or that 95% who may be upper funnel, who may be mid funnel, again, figuring out how that engine works. I think that's how sort of our teams work quite seamlessly. And mm-hmm. at Jellyfish, we have a team of paid search, paid social, programmatic display, content syndication, retail media, but we are supported by an investment analytics team, and that's data and numbers, who essentially guide us into where we're going. So this week, the brand that we are working for, their numbers don't look so great. Okay, well, let's dial it up on the upper funnel stuff. This week, actually, we've got some really good ROAS performance. Let's dial it in on the search stuff. So as long as you've got sort of a conductor conducting the orchestra, I'm about to mix my metaphors pretty badly there, then the teams kind of should work together. They shouldn't really be sort of, you know, who owns that platform? Oh, is it search? Is it social? Is it really shouldn't matter as far as the advertiser is concerned.
If you were to put upper funnel and lower funnel and put them to a group and a band, which would they be? Who's brass? Who are the strings?
Oh my God, that's a good one. Who's brass and a string? I'd say like the upper funnel are like they're on the drums and they're banging the noise
loud.
All the time.
Loud. That's display. Like
that. Oh, that's display, yes. My display colleague would love that. They're the ones banging the drums.
Look at me, look at me.
I think social, we're like the piano. We've got a nice orchestra, you know, we're nice.
I think we should be the conductor.
We think we should be the conductor.
Because that's where the bulk of users spend their time. And unfortunately, I think we're given the budgets of maybe a lower instrument. We need that conductor investment. Search is really... But search behavior has changed. People are no longer by default going to Google to search things. They're going to TikTok, they're going to Pinterest, they're going to Reddit, they're going to YouTube. You know, that's the second biggest search engine, owned by the first biggest search engine. it is a behavior change. And it's now that the platforms are starting to actually go, we're noticing this change as well, and offering up as well the ad solution for a search on their platform. So you can keyword search and have that more traditional kind of paid search buy on a social platform. And that's a necessary and natural evolution.
I think you're right. The actual, you know, search we always think about in the terms of the biggest search engine, Google out there, but actually search behavior. And I think this is always the thing with Pinterest that I remember Pinterest was always like, oh, we are a search platform, we are a social platform, we're a commerce platform, and it can fit into each of those. But you're right, the behavior itself of searching for something you want, like that's kind of evolving.
And I think depending what someone is searching for, right? So they might be in mind that they're going to buy a new car and they're at the early stage of that kind of decision making, and their default platform to go and search for that car might not be Google. They might go straight to Reddit and they'll go to the car subreddit and they'll read reviews and they'll read about that. And then they might start to look, well, how many car seats can I fit in the back? And then they might head to Pinterest and then they might go, right, well, who else has got, you know, something like that? And then they might head to Instagram and they might look at, you know, the other influencers that they follow, for example. So that behavior swaps and changes depending on the time if that they are in their purchase decision and the platform. But that kind of search queries is a lot more kind of fluid and native. But again, it depends on what the purchase is that they know they want to make. And then they're intentional and they will swap locations for
it. It's our Gen Z audience. It's when they're searching, it is the, and we often talk about it, it's around like 97% of searches on Pinterest are unbranded, right? Mm-hmm. And it'd be the same on these other platforms. And there was a talk I was listening to, I can't remember who it was, but very similar in terms of like, when you're looking for like holiday inspiration, right? Like me going to Egypt, right? I'll probably start that on Pinterest or TikTok or Instagram because I'll be looking for like, what are others doing? What content has been produced around it? The last thing I'll likely do is go on Google and go, okay, I've got to book tickets for this thing. So I'm so far at the end of that journey by the point I'm in search that actually all the job to win me over has been done elsewhere.
And I think where you're bringing in Google to that, where it might start the... it might have started that kind of journey initially. Now it's ending it in terms of you go to Google to find where you can get the best price.
Yeah, you know.
And to refine that.
So that I think is a great analogy of exactly like how Pinterest is in this kind of new place that we're in, is that bottom part of it doesn't have to be left to go onto Google or wherever else. Actually, this is all part of that single journey, and you're in the mindset, you're looking at your board, well, why don't you just book it now? And I think that's where I think social commerce in general is developing, which is why when we go back to your original question around like the blending of teams, I think that's why it's so different now, because actually when you're thinking about those search strategies and kind of keyword strategies, but also looking at people who are in market, well, they're in market elsewhere as well. And actually, you can do keyword strategies on Pinterest and others. And actually, they are really there. You're also just speaking to a newer audience as well. The last bit I'll say on that is that sometimes we see performance budgets being held by two platforms. But actually, what they do really well, especially if we look at like Meta, for example, are fantastic from a free targeting point of view, right? It always performs quite well. And it's kind of almost as similar with Google. But you're kind of just feeding the same little market that's already got that purchase intent and probably going to do something. So are we spending too much effort there? Well, actually, if we look at like prospecting and how we're driving amazing ROAS there on places like Pinterest and I'm sure others, well, actually, that's where money's to be made. That's where you actually make impact on the bottom line. So things that mindset amongst teams has to shift a little bit just to kind of go, well, actually, now we're just talking performance across everything, search and social.
I was going to say, it's interesting, like performance budgets, something one of my brilliant colleagues, Tom Roach, who wrote a post on something we call the performance plateau, where performance is not just bottom of the funnel. Actually, it's at every stage. Mm-hmm. And we've been conditioned to think of performance as just the last click that someone makes. Whereas actually, performance is all across the board. And our sort of phrase is like, it's not performance marketing, it's marketing performance. And that's something that's really important to note. It's like the performance budgets, actually that at every stage of a consumer journey, there is performance, that optimization that can be eked out, whether that's branding, whether that's considerations, working with influencers, whether that's actually last click, actually getting the transaction. So we talked about retail media. That's another thing as well. So there's performance at every kind of single stage. So it's that mindset shift that is happening across agencies.
Yeah. I think across a lot of marketing, there's mindset shifts that need to be happening, whether it's with performance you're saying, or what people think about AI, or how platforms are behaving differently. I think a lot of them have conceptions that are false or are changing. But one thing we haven't spoken about is attribution and the changing perceptions that this is having on platforms as well. So what can you guys talk about from clients' perspective on how is this actually being changed, and what are some of the results that they're seeing at the moment?
I think for the longest time, we've been having conversations around moving away from last click attribution, because social, when you look at it from that perspective, doesn't have the value recognized that it actually delivers across the, you know, the consumer journey. So you know, that's why the integration of platforms like Pinterest, the CAPI integration are really important. And challengingly, they are often owned by different clients. So like your media client doesn't typically have control and the authority to authorize an integration for data swap between a platform and their website. So it's a challenging one, but I think more and more we're seeing those conversations shift around an attributed model and not a last click model. And I think that once we have that, we will really see, you know, platforms like Pinterest and others shine and come into their own, and we can start to shift that conversation around diversification of budget accordingly.
Similar thing. It's interesting, the attribution discussion that we have post Apple's AT&T world, it's probably a good thing that things kind of shifted on from then. What we talk to a lot of clients around is, what's the incremental lift that they were likely to have? So would someone who was going to buy something, would they have bought it anyway? So one of the things we talk to a lot of clients around when it comes to sort of performance elements or attribution or measurement, as we call it, is around making sure we're doing things like conversion lift studies or brand lift studies, figuring out what's the incremental value. So, you know, you spent on the, so rather than pitting one platform or channel against another, what incremental lift can we get from working with Pinterest? And I think it'll be interesting to, Matt, would love to understand your perspective, like categories that are really performing well on Pinterest and actually having those as kind of like the benchmark of what a good campaign on Pinterest looks like, rather than saying, well, you know, you can do something on Pinterest versus like Meta versus Google. It's like, well, that may have happened anyway on those platforms. Let's look at what does the incremental lift look like on the Pinterest platform itself. Ooh,
benchmarks. Yeah, let's have it. I always want some benchmarks.
Yeah, that is a good question. I think to address your first point, actually, before answering your question, which I think is very interesting in terms of incrementality, that's ultimately where we see one of our biggest strengths. Because to my point earlier, where performance budget staying within these kind of two well-known platforms, you're playing in a place where actually, was this going to happen anyway? So, and actually, when you're engaging with new audiences or kind of different audiences, actually the ROAS that you're driving in those campaigns is incremental, right? And that's why we see so much growth in the shopping space. That's why we see so much of kind of our shopping budgets taking over competitors in terms of that share of that, a lot with a lot of clients, and just general ROAS growing at such a high rate. Because also, when you see people who have high intention or who are actively planning, they're going to buy more. Right, you're not being surprised into a purchase. I'm planning for it, so I'm going to buy this and this and this. I'm going to buy the jeans, the t-shirt, and the jacket. Right, and that's I think why also performance is doing so well. Now, in terms of your actual question, in terms of categories, that is really interesting. Home has always been one of these things that everyone's got. Oh, it's Pinterest for home. And if I meet someone, an agency or a client, and my kitchen. And when I meet clients or agency people or whoever it is, those people who haven't used Pinterest before, who are new to it, will often say, oh, I'm using it because I'm doing up the house now, right? But actually, home is actually not the biggest category on Pinterest. It's one of, but the others are food, actually. That's why we see, like, grocery as a category do really, really well. So a lot of like testing there, but also like even if you look at like FMCG brands, like actually there's a lot of winning there because you're in the mindset of what are we cooking this weekend.
Don't want just this to be Pinterest praising session, but there is not one client that I have that I couldn't think of an applicable use case for Pinterest for, whether it is finance or you know wealth management, auto. Luxury, pharma, like a healthcare brand. Like there is a use case, I think, and that's where you really have to be really strategic and work with your teams to understand what are they considering and that we're not just defaulting to same, but also spreading that budget across depending on the audience, the objectives, and considering platforms that we may not have otherwise thought of for that.
I think something to add to that. We often talk about this idea that moments are made on Pinterest. It's one of those like funny marketing things, right? but it's very true, right? To everything, every example you just gave there is based around locally a life moment, right? Even finance, right? Finance does do so well on Pinterest because people are looking at moving house or having babies. Parents is such a huge category on Pinterest, right? And the brands that are leaning into that, toy brands, like mother care brands, they do so well because they're speaking directly to the audience who are looking at it. And the last category I'll mention actually is fashion. So from a performance perspective, actually fashion is probably one of the most lent in verticals that we have right now, and they do so well. And it's funny what you said earlier about like sometimes being surprised into like a fashion purchase or surprised into anything. But actually fashion it's so much about who we are and so considered. And it's why fashion brands are flocking to Pinterest in such a big way and purely driving performance activity, actually. Not actually that much brand building consideration. It's all ROAS driving activity.
I think going back full circle, that's where the Pinterest functionality around skin tone and body shape really leans into that because you do make it personal for that person.
Yeah.
My daughter hasn't yet got a Pinterest account, but I feel after this podcast, she's doing her room up as well. So
let her plan a board.
She's going to plan a whole board.
She just said she's going to listen in as well.
She will listen in. So this one's for you, Maya. You know, I'll let you have Pinterest now.
That's very good.
I love ending on a full circle moment. I mean, it's so neat and tidy for me. So
you're welcome.
It's best you stop us there, otherwise we'll go on.
Again, thank you all so much for joining us for this episode. It's been a brilliant discussion. We've covered lots, we've delved deep, and yeah, it was very interesting for me to sit in and listen. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.